Steve.
Hello.
Hey, hi, Steve. Eric Mann. How you doing?
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Good.
Been a long time.
Absolutely. And so we're going to just do a quick intro. And what's your present title, Steve?
It's a sort of complicated bureaucratic one. Why don't we just say CWA, National Union Representative in New England?
Sounds good. National Representative in New England. We just had Bob Masters on.
Oh, yeah.
So,
anything I need to know that I shouldn't repeat?
No, it's all good. I mean, I think everybody is, I don't know, it feels like we're having a UN diplomatic corps here, you know. So I'm going to ask you to step out a little bit more.
Okay.
Okay?
I'll be glad to do that.
All right.
How much time do we have?
We have 20 minutes, and we're going to try to get right away. They want to get a three-minute bite from you opener. That they're going to try to run on tonight's news. Then they're going to do the 20 minute, you know, of the first 20 minutes, they're going to try to grab the first three.
Okay.
And so I'll ask you, you know, what do you think of the split? Do a 3 minute one, and then I'll come back in and, you know, we'll go longer.
Okay.
All right. So.
All right. Do we have a minute or two? We're about to hop on.
We're going to do it right now. Is that okay. Good for you?
Sounds good.
Okay. Hi, everybody. This is a special edition of Voices from the Frontlines, part of our national coverage of the AFL-CIO convention and what will go down as either the famous or infamous split between the Change to Win Coalition and the AFL-CIO leadership. I'm here with Tammy Van Glue, my co-host. This is Eric Mann, and we're on the phone with Steve Early, a longtime movement activist, first, I would say, and secondly, also a longtime organizer with the Communication Workers of America, presently one of their national representatives in New England. Hi, Steve. Nice to have you on the show.
Hi, Eric. Glad to be here.
Well, you've been around a long time. You've watched this coming. What do you think of it? I mean, what do you think the implications are for the movement? Give us your short answer first.
Well, it's a quite spectacular midlife crisis for the AFL-CIO, leading today, I would say, to quite acrimonious divorce. You know, what's disturbing to me is that I don't think the differences are really that great between the approaches of the competing and contending factions of the labor officialdom that are or were gathered in Chicago until the walkout by the Change to Win Coalition unions. I mean, the one positive thing about this whole debate, though, that's been going on about the future of the labor movement is that it's legitimized dissent and criticism, discussion. I just wish more of it were going on at the grassroots level, that more members were engaged, that there was a more kind of democratic process of developing new strategies, new ideas, new alternatives for unions really committed at the grassroots level to changing to win.
Do you think there's, if there was one issue that you think was the most substantial difference, even if that difference is being overstated, what would you say it was?
Well, I mean, these are not issues that are terribly galvanizing in terms of the larger public or, you know, the millions of union members who, you know, are quite estranged, I think, from what's going on at this level of the labor bureaucracy. I mean, the whole question of union mergers and jurisdiction, AFL-CIO dues, what should be spent on politicians, how many unions should be represented on the AFL's governing body. The union members that I work with and the non-union workers that we're trying to help organize have day-to-day concerns that involve employers taking away their health care, cutting their wages, subjecting them to unsafe and unhealthy conditions on the job, to all kinds of speed-up conditions. Again, the debate is not addressing worker issues. It's addressing kind of insider baseball issues, inside the Beltway concerns of full-time union officials. And I think the question of union mergers is probably the one that you know, raises the most substantive differences in terms of approach. I mean, do we build power in the labor movement through bureaucratic consolidation, which is kind of the approach of the Coalition to Win, or do we do it from the bottom up through membership activity, through rank-and-file participation, through grassroots initiative, through movement building?
Well, I think that, you know where I would sort of stand on that, and I think here's the kind of concerns I have. In the commentary that I did this morning, and, you know, I worked with the United Auto Workers as the reason I was an assembly line worker for 10 years was to not get involved in some of the bureaucratic fights at the top, but try to change it from the bottom up. So on one hand, you have a fight over, as you say, whether it's $22 million or $50 million for organizing. A concern I've raised back is there's also a problem of servicing your existing members, which doesn't seem to be discussed as much. Obviously, we need more money for organizing, but a lot of the members don't feel very representative as the company is moving against them on the shop floor. I wish the war in Iraq was a serious splitting issue, because I think it's just the silence on the war, and there's some great people in labor against the war, but it's not visible to me in terms of the leadership coming either from the Sweeney side or from the Change to Win side, frankly. I wish there was more discussion of 2 million people in prison, 1.2 million of whom are black and Latino, which I don't think the labor movement in L.A. does very much on, let alone the labor movement nationally. So you have sort of three splits. First, you have the split between the progressive movement, in my opinion, and the vast majority of both factions or both sides inside the AFL right now, where neither side is a major ally, in my opinion, on those broader issues of global warming, systematic police state, and the war, for instance.
Yeah, I think those are very good examples. I am proud to report that at CWA's national convention last year, an annual gathering of about 2,000 elected delegates, very strong anti-war resolution was adopted as a result of the initiative of supporters of U.S. labor against the law, the war within the union. It calls for immediate withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq and condemns the Bush administration's disastrous intervention there. And this was the product of an initiative on the convention floor, people speaking up, amending a much weaker resolution. And, you know, I would hope that the AFL-CIO delegates would have the courage to do the same thing in Chicago, to take the kind of strong stand that would reflect where the majority of the American people are at the moment on that issue. On the other thing that you raised, I think it's really true that neglecting the day-to-day threats to working conditions, to wages, to benefits, to job rights of the existing members is terribly dangerous because, you know, to the extent that there's a grassroots upsurge out there, particularly on the West Coast, and a real initiative from below in the area of organizing, it's an independent union movement trend out of some of the very same unions that are part of the Change to Win coalition and also the Sweeney supporters. All up and down the West Coast, you have rank-and-file members forming independent unions in the private and the public sector, leaving unions in large numbers like the Carpenters, like AFSCME, the independent union at the University of California, Q, a few years ago. You had independent unions replace the machinists and the Teamsters at very big bargaining units of mechanics and flight attendants at United and Northwest. You have ambulance workers decertifying at CIU and forming their own union. Janitors in San Francisco did it briefly in response to forced mergers and trusteeships. I think when you have a bureaucratic union approach, a top-down union approach, when unions are not responsive to members' problems day-to-day on the job, you know, people take matters into their own hand and start to form their own unions. And that's actually going to be more possible now that there is this split. I think to the extent there's competing labor federations, people will have more choices, and perhaps they'll have more leverage to make their existing unions more responsive.
Well, that's one of the arguments. You know, it may not be the actual argument of those who caused the split, but it may be one of the good sides of it. Is the other side of it, you know, I've never understood the relationship between AFSCME and SEIU too well, except that they don't seem to like each other that well. They do seem to have a lot of overlapping jurisdictions. Do you think this is going to lead to possible raids, not just in that field, but do you think that the fight for new members could be the possibility of fighting to get each other's members?
Well, I think that's already going on in Southern California, in San Diego, where you had a very troubled group representing home health care workers, the United Domestic Workers, that was an AFSCME affiliate for many years, not run very democratically, with a lot of internal problems. AFSCME recently put it under trusteeship, and now the former leadership of the group has aligned itself with SEIU, and you have a free-for-all between these two unions, you know, over who should represent tens of thousands of home health care workers in the San Diego area. And I think that the fight over the daycare workers, state-funded daycare workers in Illinois, are a kind of taste of what may go on in and around the public sector if those two unions continue to kind of square off in this fashion.
We had Martin Ludlow on our show. Martin Ludlow was, first of all, a civil rights activist. Then he became a city council person, just got elected a couple of years ago. And then with the death of Miguel Contreras, who's was the head of the County Federation of Labor in Los Angeles, Martin became the new head of the county fed. We had him on today, and he was probably purposefully diplomatic, let's say, about what I was trying to understand, which is, what is this going to look like at the local level? I mean, are we going to have now two county federations of labor in Boston?
Well, the change to win coalition members are, I think, putting a lot of pressure on state and local central labor councils to let them remain active at that level, even as they disaffiliate from the AFL-CIO nationally and not pay any more dues. I've always been a strong supporter of the Community Labor Coalition known as Jobs with Justice. We've built this group over the last 17 years, and its organizing principle at the local level is solidarity coalition open to any rank-and-file activists, any local union, whether they're from an independent union, an AFL union, any kind of union or community group that was willing to come together and work together to defend workers' rights, support strikes, support organizing campaigns, and so forth. And, you know, they operate, many of these Jobs with Justice coalitions, I would say, in a much more grassroots fashion than the Central Labor Councils. Now, you know, that's a principle of volunteerism. Nobody in Washington is telling us who can be affiliated and who cannot be affiliated. I'm not sure those kinds of dictates from the top are going to be particularly productive in the wake of these national union defections. On the other hand, you know, the national unions are feeling that somebody shouldn't be allowed to take their marbles and go home at that level and still be a big player in the Los Angeles Fed or any other major AFL-CIO body. So that is going to be an area, I think, of great conflict, great distress, great discord and tension for some months to come as this thing shakes out. I mean, some of the unions in the Change to Win coalition, like the Teamsters, very few of their locals participate in Central Labor Council, so
right.
It's not going to make much of a difference one way or another.
Well, if you just take in L.A., where SEIU and Unite Here are two very powerful and relatively progressive unions in the city, and who were instrumental in getting Martin Ludlow elected, who's a black man who was elected the new head of the County Federation of Labor. I'm just trying to imagine it, though, at the local level, if Sweeney is calling down and saying, look, as you said, you called me a sellout. You told me that I'm so corrupt and so forth that you don't even want to work with me. You don't want to pay dues. But down at the local level, you know, I'll be in an alliance with you, but you better form your own Fed. Is that at least the possibility?
Yeah, I mean, that's the...
Or do you think he's going to say, I don't want to fight this out at the local level?
I think many Central Labor Council officials are going to respond to this dilemma based on their own local budgets and, you know, how many dues-paying members they would lose if defecting national unions also bailed on local central labor bodies. But, I think, you know, it sidesteps the whole question of what do we need to do to further the process of making central labor councils more democratic, more rank-and-file oriented, more activist, and in many places they are still not.
That's
there's
right.
Some exemplary ones, but there are many that are just, you know, clubs of full-time union officials that are not very active and that don't really represent the best of what the labor movement should be doing around some of the issues that you mentioned before, you know, war, poverty, discrimination, environmental problems, and so there's a lot of room for improvement, and again, you know, squabbles over who's in or out of the club, who's paying dues or not, may be a distraction from more fundamental efforts to change them in a better direction.
Well, you know that Tammy and I work with an organization called the Labor Community Strategy Center, which you know, and of course, and it's independent. It's a independent working class, primarily of color organization, trying to work both in alliance with both of the tendencies, we would say, inside now the AFL-CIO, but one of the reasons we formed the Strategy Center was because we didn't think that the AFL-CIO could lead a progressive working class movement. We think it's way too close to the Democratic Party, which doesn't mean we don't work with it. It doesn't mean some of our members are not in unions.
Right.
But similar to the Jobs with Justice initiative, I think there's a lot of experiments that are going to have to take place around other forces for working class people. Because, as you said, I mean, when we go on the buses and we try to talk to people on the bus about the bus, it's hard to get their attention sometimes.
Right.
You know, I mean, they want to talk about, you know, what TV show they saw, they're sleeping, or what's on sale at the 99-cent store. And we're trying to talk to them about social revolution, anti-racism, and can we even build a movement on the bus?
Right.
But we're succeeding, you know, but it's an uphill struggle. Imagine if we say to them, what do you think about the percentage of dues that the, you see, there's a split going on. One group felt that, you know, the credit cards, well, they don't get enough kickback from, what credit card? Well, they all get a credit card. And apparently, I mean,
this is my stop. I'm getting off.
Right. I mean,
on that question of politics, though, Eric, I mean, we have worse things to worry about than labor, you know, getting into bed with the Democrats too much of the time to the detriment of the interests of the members. I mean, leading unions in this Change the Wind coalition, including SEIU, including the Carpenters, certainly the Teamsters, have had among the closest relationships of any unions with leading Republican politicians. They have made a strategy, a so-called independent political action strategy, out of embracing Republicans to somehow teach wayward Democrats a lesson. And this has gone from McCarran, the head of the Carpenters, cozying up to Bush and remaining neutral in the presidential election last year, the service employees in Unite HRE endorsing conservative Republican George Pataki in the governor's race in New York 3 years ago, the service employees funneling money into the Republican National Governors Conference for campaigns around the country. I think this is a very, very seriously destructive development. It's a kind of political scabbing, which is counterproductive and takes us in exactly the wrong direction we need to go in terms of true labor independence from the two major parties. So I think that's one very big downside that we may see more of as a result of these groups, strange bedfellows that some people seem to think they are, kind of coalescing and working more closely with each other.
Well, I think that one of the things in listening, and I've learned a lot from you, Steve, in this interview, is that I think we're going into a situation where the most profound insight we have is we don't know what's going to happen. And that there's that one of the things is going to happen is there's going to be a tremendous amount of flux. So, and I think there may be more up for grabs, not so much because, as you say, these splits are going to cause rank and file insurgencies at the bottom, but they're going to create openings for either forces from the Strategy Center or Jobs with Justice or progressive unions to try to fight, develop essentially a debate among working class people, because from what I've heard, the debate within the established labor movement is not speaking to the tremendous crisis of what's happening. And your point about the there's nothing wrong with endorsing an occasional Republican to keep the Democrats honest, but the kind of wheeling and dealing, it's just sort of taking the wheeling and dealing with the Democrats and raising it to a lower level rather than a higher level. Is that fair of what you're saying?
Exactly. And, I mean, I think it's very breeds further cynicism among rank and file union members about union political action, and there's a lot of that already as a result of people being continually disappointed by their unions endorsing Democrats and them turning around and then supporting, you know, free trade deals and supporting privatization, supporting all kinds of things that are not consistent with being a so-called friend of labor.
On a subsequent show, we'd like to ask you more about this development of independent unions. It's something I was not as aware of, and I think it's been a very important contribution. Steve, we'd like to thank you for being on the show, and thank you for your candor. And we'd like to have you as a guest in subsequent shows. You're on Voices from the Frontlines, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. This is Eric Mann with Tammy Banglou. We've just interviewed Steve Early, who's a national organizer with the Communication Workers of America, and we'll be back soon on further issues. See you next week on Voices from the Frontlines as part of KPFK's national coverage of the AFL-CIO and the labor movement.